The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
At some point, I always wanted to start my own thing, but I spent a while in the entrepreneur zone, like wanting to start something.
That's a good term, the entrepreneur zone, right? It's a lot of people in that zone.
Yeah, and it's very hard to get out of it. If you don't get started with anything, you can just keep analyzing, keep dreaming, and nothing happens.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people are afraid to move forward. They're always overanalyzing things, and sometimes you just got to give it a shot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And for me, the big push there was when I enrolled in the Founder Institute, and they sort of the value proposition was, we'll teach you how to build a company. And when you get out of the Founder Institute, you'll have one. Otherwise, you don't graduate.
An incubator almost? It helps you develop the accelerator. Company? Accelerator. Yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah. So you had an idea going in there? Like you have to have an idea to go into the program or not really?
I had an idea that was my top idea that I wanted to develop in the first class. We got the founder of the Founder Institute on Zoom at that moment, and I pitched my idea, and he gave it a 1.
Out of what?
He said it was really crappy. 5.
Out of 5. Well, it's better than out of 10, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's how you learn, right? People shoot you down.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Well, do you remember what the idea was?
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
I'm Jeroen Kortout of SalesFlare, easy to use and automated CRM for small and medium-sized businesses.
All right, Jeroen, thanks for joining me. Dinner time, your time, I guess, right? Because you're in Belgium and you said that I'm in the United States and it's about 6 hours behind you. So it's just my end of my morning. I'm eating lunch after this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've had a long
you
day.
You mostly eat lunch when I eat dinner. That's great.
Right, exactly.
But it's 5. So not really dinner time yet, but getting close. Yeah. It's Friday. So we made a habit in this pandemic to every Friday order out to support the local restaurants. And thanks to Uber Eats, who give out a 40 or 50% discount on these meals, sponsored by their VC budgets.
Is that what happening? Uber Eats is giving them a discount, like paying part of your dinner?
Yeah. So the restaurants still earn the same.
Right.
We way less. So
oh, I got to look really, into that if Uber Eats does that in the States. I mean, we have DoorDash and Grubhub and all these different services, but we do the same thing. It's weekend, so you want to support the local businesses, and you.
Yeah.
And my wife doesn't want to cook anyway. She's been cooking all week, so and we order out. But I know you also came out of a 3-hour meeting, so hopefully we can keep you awake. It's stressful. So I appreciate you coming on. I know your PR person, I think Carrie, right, connected us. She found me online. I have a big entrepreneurial following, and I'm interested to learn about, you know, Sales Flare, what it does. But maybe we can first go back to, you know, kind of how you got started in corporate, because I know you left corporate, and then other ventures that you were involved with. And then we could get up to Sales Flare and what it does and why you started the company.
Yeah, I think if we if we want to be complete, it's maybe to start the story slightly earlier
perfect.
Than corporate.
Good.
It's when I was 15, 16. That's when I first sort of touched entrepreneurship. I always really liked building stuff as a kid, in all forms, like whether it was building camps in the woods or having this kind of, at some point we built this underground camp in the woods next to us,
okay.
You know, like a tunnel, and then we covered it up.
Right.
It was a lot of fun. Until the people who actually owned the woods next to us.
It was private land.
Yeah, it was private land. But we sort of ignored that fact for a long time because they never came or did anything.
It was just woods, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But at some point, there was a new regulation in Belgium that when you wanted to cut woods, and that regulation was going to come up, you had to pay a certain amount per acre in the woods. So before that regulation happened, they came and started cutting a lot because they were planning to sell it to build a house on. And when they were doing that, I remember the tractor they were using got stuck in our camp. But they didn't know
it was hidden, right? Oops.
Yeah. But I always liked this kind of stuff or drawing or I don't know how to say it in English, bricolage or like creating stuff.
You know, like artwork and sculptures and stuff. Yeah, like a lot of entrepreneurs, you're right brain. You're not left brain. You're creative. You like to create things.
I'm sort of in between both, I would say.
Well, that's what makes successful entrepreneurship for sure. You need to be able to do both.
My dad is more the left brain one, and my mom is more the right brain one, I would say. My mom is an architect. My dad is an engineer. Engineer in the sense of research, mostly. But leading research organizations has been his job most of his life. So I got a bit from both sides.
Uh-huh.
But my first like time that I really sort of did something for other people and got some money for it and stuff.
Right.
Was when I started building websites.
Okay.
At first, yeah, me and some friends, we were on GeoCities building this.
Yeah, I remember.
I don't know whether you remember that.
Yeah, I do. I remember GeoCities. Yeah.
These very easy, awful websites with some animations and a counter at the bottom, etc.
Right.
That's what sort of started sparking my interest in websites.
Was that in high school? You were still a teenager, or?
I was at that moment. I was 14, I think.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You did it early. Okay, and it wasn't as easy then as it is now. You know, all the tools that are. People go build their own websites.
Yeah. So GeoCities was easy, right? But then from there, it didn't look so good, and there weren't a whole lot of possibilities.
Right.
So I started learning some HTML, and I started learning some Flash. Mm-hmm. Flash was still a thing back then.
Yeah.
Now it's dead. Yeah. At that moment, people at least considered building full websites in it. And I did that for a bit, building for different people, including my mom.
So it was like a little small business. You were dealing with customers, you building websites for people. They were all small business owners?
More or less. I mean, I wasn't earning a lot of money. I mean, in my eyes at that moment, it was a lot of money.
Yeah, well, you're 14 years old, so you get $10 an hour. You think it's a lot of money.
Yeah. Right. Or somebody would pay me by just buying me a book or something.
Right. You would be like, this happy. Is great. Sure.
Yeah. And then I actually saw my future, me having a web agency. I thought that was going to be the coolest thing. And next to that, I also discovered there was this whole thing online, like there was eBay at that moment. And there was some secondhand websites coming up. And I saw this sort of arbitrage opportunity of buying secondhand phones in Germany and the UK and then reselling them to people in Belgium. So I would find the really cheap ones and I would have right. this sniping software on eBay that would buy them at the last moment instead of starting to bid early. It was just at the last 3 seconds, basically, would bid.
Really? Did you develop that software or was it software you bought?
No, it was there. And I use it for free. I was a teenager, so I didn't pay for anything.
Obviously. Right. So I always wondered that. You're bidding on something in eBay. There's always somebody who comes up like the last second and they outbid you. So that's what they were doing, right?
That's automated. Yeah. And it's there's a lot of services for that. And it's sort of you need to be very specific where you put it, because if you put it too late, with all the delays and stuff, you might be just too late to do the bid. So I think it was usually 3 seconds was sort of at that moment, at least, was the right moment. Of course, if you have another person using a similar software, then
They're competing with you. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so then you would buy these things and then put them up on your website and then resell them in Belgium.
I would go on secondhand websites in Belgium, put the things up there. Sometimes I got the thing and there were a bit too many scratches on it or something, but then at that moment, it was a thing with cell phone covers. So I would buy another cover and it would be fixed.
You like refurbished it.
Yeah, slightly refurbished and then resold it. And it's like, oh, it's like new.
It was like Amazon Marketplace, right? You went kind of, right?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually still like to do that as a hobby just to upgrade my phone. I still do a similar thing.
To upgrade them to like not the newest phone, but maybe a newer phone.
Yeah. For instance, now I have the Google Pixel 4 XL.
Right.
And I actually found a guy who offers the 5, but I saw that the 5 is worse. But I could get the 5 now. Some people are selling them already. So I don't get the newest phone at the moment it comes out because nobody sells it then.
Right.
But from a few months after, people start actually putting them on the market because they, whatever, there's so many crazy people out there wanting the latest phone.
Right, of course.
You know.
And you save a lot of money, right? Because you're not paying top dollar anymore for...
No. It's like, for instance, they sell this one at 800 or so.
Right.
Like Google, when they start selling, and I buy them at 400. Just a few months later.
Yeah.
And then when I upgrade, I had a while I could keep it going that I actually was winning money by doing this system. Now I pay a little amount of money to upgrade.
So you're really, it's a thin margin now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm upgrading my phone and I don't pay a lot of money for it. And I upgraded
plus you're able to sell the old phone, right? So you're only paying the difference between the two.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Right. Sure.
The difference isn't big.
Yeah.
Now, to go forward in my story, I thought about, studying computer engineering, to have my,
at university.
Agency. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I went to the open day, it just seemed it seemed like the things that they were exhibiting were a bit out of my world. And the people exhibiting them seemed kind of nerdy. so I didn't end up choosing computer engineering. I still did engineering, but I went for electrical engineering with business management in my bachelor.
Yeah, those are good combinations because you need to learn how things work and how you put them together and also the business side of it.
Yeah, and I always liked that. So when I went for my master's, it was biomedical engineering because I figured was way more interesting than energy or making cell phones or microcircuits or whatever.
Right.
Those were my other options. And I could have a bigger impact on the world. But then when I went applying for jobs after that, it was kind of frustrating because I didn't really want to do a pure engineering job. I wanted to do something with customers. Right. I always liked creating stuff, but not creating stuff disconnected from people.
Right.
And I remember the point that I was in a job interview and it was for an application engineer position, which was sort of with customers already, but I wanted more with customers. And they said, oh, maybe a project manager or something for you. And then they made me do a test whether I was a good project manager. They decided I wasn't. So I wasn't getting the job.
Okay.
But then that evening, I just said, I can't do this anymore. And with the credit card of a friend, which we were going out into the bars that night, before that, I paid for an entry test at business school.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to convince my parents that I wasn't going to get a job for another year. And that business school is rather expensive as well. So
yeah, just
I promised
here
that I would pay it.
That's an MBA? Is that what it is? It's a master's in business?
It's sort of like an MBA, but then for people who just graduate. So imagine it's the same program.
Right.
The professors are maybe a bit less. And of course, the student body is not fellow people who work, but fellow people who just graduated.
And it's what, a one-year program in addition to
a one-year program?
So it's another 1 year?
Yeah. Right. It's called a master's in general management.
Okay.
So I did that, and that was really nice because I after that I actually went into marketing. I didn't go into engineering at all.
Right.
And I went to do marketing in a pharmaceutical company because I studied biomedical engineering, I want to do something medical. And that was because I thought, you know, I had my eyes set on starting my own company.
Right.
But I felt that I didn't have necessary experience yet. I knew nothing.
That's, right. Well, you come out of school. You don't. It's ironic. You go to school for 5 years and you learn nothing about the real world. Yeah.
Yeah. Not how things work. No.
No. No. Not at all. So that was really your first corporate job, though. Then you're right.
Yeah. It was an actual corporate job. I was working at a Baxter. Baxter, a big U.S. pharma company at that moment, about 40,000 employees.
Yeah,
I know they split up the company now, sold parts to here and there. But
it's always realigning that industry.
Yeah, 40,000 people, and I was in the Belgian subsidiary working on the marketing for some vaccines, and also for some blood products. Part of them from plasma, part of them recombinant. Doesn't matter. I thought that this was going to teach me on how to put a product in the market because I was interested in learning that.
Right.
It didn't really.
No.
I imagined way more in a job like that. In the end, it seemed that what I was mainly doing was taking the marketing that someone on European level had already decided how it was going to be. I had to translate it. In Belgium, there's two official languages, so two languages. So I made brochures in two languages, would have them approved by regulatory. I would have them teach the sales team how to use them, these kind of things.
Right.
Very, very limited versus what I thought I was going to learn.
Got it. So you really weren't creating anything. They were just giving you the stuff and they were saying, here, put this together and teach everybody. Yeah.
And there was very little creativity going in there. And anything creative, sort of, if I then would try to get budget for that, it was very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Even to convince people to build a certain website or so was like, and it would take super long to get things approved.
Yeah. Well, you know, the world's kind of changing now because a lot of corporations are trying to teach their employees and their executives to think more entrepreneurial, to be more, you know, to treat it like it's their own business. Because like you said, you know, that was corporate America, right? Everything moves slow. Nobody takes any ownership, but they're trying, you know, a lot of companies are now trying to change that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. And I certainly think something is moving. I don't think it's moving fast enough.
No.
But we have here in Antwerp a very successful consultancy called the Board of Innovation in that respect that really helps companies to think more like startups.
Mm-hmm.
What I actually ended up doing after the corporate job was sort of like that as well. So when I was working at Baxter, I found out that nobody knew anything about building websites, and everybody who was building a website started asking me questions because I figured out, oh, there's this one guy that knows something about it in this company.
Ah, okay.
So I thought I could start a web agency for pharma because I figured, well, I know websites and I've sort of figured out pharma now after 6 months. So I could start this.
No, you knew everything you needed to know. Yeah. Right? It only took 6 months.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I had dinner with someone who I knew did something in that area that lived close to where I used to live. And I found out that actually he had a company helping pharma companies to digitalize, to really adapt to the new world, but way broader than just building websites. And he said to me, like
digital marketing, like everything.
Yeah, everything. Digital marketing, sales, medical is also a thing in pharma, and everything behind that as well, which he called ECRM at the time. Like in the end, we did in the beginning, we did a lot of websites when I joined them.
Right.
And limited digital marketing campaigns. Towards the moment that I left, we were doing full multi-channel marketing campaigns. Really a ton of different channels and in lots of cases replacing sales forces completely, especially for older products.
Right.
And keeping the sales up or even increasing them.
And this was how many years ago?
This is by now 7 years ago.
Yeah, so when I left. Social media wasn't as developed as it is now. I mean, it was developed. It was out there, but it's a little different now.
We have more advanced social media features, I guess. But Facebook ads existed, and LinkedIn was there.
Right.
And Twitter and anyway, yeah, it wasn't. I mean, not a
wasn't
huge
much competition,
difference.
Right? Exactly.
Social media is a hard one for pharma, though. But there's a whole lot of other things you can do. Regulatory always is a huge showstopper.
Right, of course. Like the financial business, it's the same thing. You got all kinds of regulatory stuff.
Yeah, and also, well, towards doctors, that's one degree. But then towards patients, it's really, really, really regulated.
Right, sure.
Less so in the US than in Europe.
Europe has more regulations.
Yeah, way more.
Yeah, I find that in a lot of industries, they have a lot more. They're like more ahead of the curve when it comes to like environmental regulations and healthcare regulations and food regulations. I mean, we have things in products in the United States that Europe would never put in their, allow in their products, you know?
No. And to a large extent, I think that's a good thing, the regulations in Europe.
Yeah.
Some things are not good, but... that's another
episode.
Yeah.
So you worked for him for a while then?
Yeah. He told me like, come work for us 6 months. I'll teach you everything. If you want to leave, then leave, whatever. I ended up working there for 4 years.
Okay.
It was a great experience though. I moved from the very corporate, atmosphere where, I didn't have a lot of interesting projects or so, where all of a sudden I could take on all the interesting projects for the corporates. I was the youngest account manager there, which meant that I could take responsibility for clients, see what their needs were, develop solutions for that, write proposals, make budgets, set up project plans, get other people.
Was that still relatively a small business? How many employees did they have?
When I joined, we were 35. When I left, we were above 60.
Okay, but the other company was 40,000, so it was a little different.
Yeah, very different. But we would work for way bigger companies than Maxer also. Sure. We would work for all big pharma and some biotech as well. My main customer actually was a biotech company.
Okay.
Called Celgene.
Oh, sure. I know Celgene. Yeah, they make some drugs. Unfortunately, I had a friend who died. He had multiple myeloma.
Yeah.
And they make one of the leading drugs I know. Treatments, therapies or something. Yeah.
Revlimid. Yeah. I worked a lot on that.
Yeah. Oh, you did? Yeah.
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 Both in Europe, Canada, and the US.
Oh, okay.
So I spent a lot of time there. It was a really great experience. It was much more like leading my own business.
Yeah.
Because I was basically responsible.
Yeah, they were like your customers, like the accounts you were managing, right?
Yeah. I really learned a lot there when it comes to sales and project management and taking care of people and managing stuff in general.
Were you learning the business side about, you know, how to run a business and, you know, deal with all the ins and outs of entrepreneurship at that point, or you really kind of had to learn that on your own?
A part of it, I would say. I mean, I learned how to do sales. I learned a lot about marketing because I was doing marketing projects. I learned also about making budgets. I learned about project planning. What I did not learn was having employees and all that, you know, managing and hiring and these kind of things I didn't learn, of course.
Right.
But I did see how the business was organized, obviously. And we also went through a lot of things as we grew from 35 to above 60. There were some inflection points there. And things had to be reorganized. And that was a really great experience to be part of that. Next to that, I was often also at different companies on site. I spent on site.
Clients.
Yeah. At least three clients, experiencing very, very different cultures and ways of working, which was extremely interesting as well.
Okay. So after 4 years, did you start your own company or did you go, what did you do after that? Because I know you said you had some ventures that you were involved with, right? Some startups?
Yeah. So at some point, I always wanted to start my own thing, but I spent a while in the entrepreneur zone, like wanting to start something.
That's a good, not really. That's a good term, the entrepreneur zone, right? It's a lot of people in that zone.
Yeah, and it's very hard to get out of it. If you don't get started with anything, you can just keep analyzing, keep dreaming, and nothing happens.
Right. Yeah, a lot. I think a lot of people they're afraid to move forward. They're always overanalyzing things, and sometimes you just got to give it a shot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And for me, the big push there was when I enrolled in the Founder Institute. They sort of the value proposition was, we'll teach you how to build a company. And when you get out of the Founder Institute, you'll have one. Otherwise, you don't graduate.
An incubator almost? It like helps you develop the company?
Accelerator.
Accelerator. Yeah. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So you had an idea going in there? Like you have to have an idea to go into the program or not really?
I had an idea that was my top idea that I wanted to develop in the first class. We got the founder of the Founder Institute on Zoom at that moment, and I pitched my idea, and he gave it a 1.
Out of what?
He said it was really crappy, 5.
Out of 5. Well, it's better than out of 10, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's how you learn, right? People shoot you down.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Well, do you remember what the idea was?
Yeah. I do remember. It was actually some guys started my idea a few months ago, and I saw it in the news.
Recently, like a few months from now?
No, yeah, from months from now, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It was the idea was I had just moved to another apartment,
right?
And it's a whole lot of administration work that I really didn't like, and I noticed that a lot of the information I was providing every time was just the exact same information. But I had to go to lots of different companies, lots of different forms and all. And I thought, this could be organized by people. And
Are you talking about like, so you get an apartment, you need cable, you need gas and electric and all the, and okay.
Exactly. But imagine then going to a website, filling out your information once.
Yeah, and it'll get shot at one time.
And then it says, okay, so it seems that for you, the cheapest option is here and we'll arrange that for you. For electricity and gas, for water, we'll do that for you. And then, you know, and then at the same time, like, hey, do you need a moving company? Do you need
right? Well, then you could really build out a lot of it. So why did the guy think it was a bad idea?
I don't remember exactly. I remember he said Belgium is too small, shit market.
well, but people don't rent apartments in Belgium. It's not just rentals, right? You buy a home anytime you move.
Yeah. And actually, 10% of people moves each year.
Okay.
Interesting stat. In Belgium,
I bet you it's higher here.
It's even more, yeah.
Especially right now, everybody's jumping and moving, and from the big cities, they're all moving out, and they're not only moving, they're moving from New York, let's say, to my town, and they don't know anything because it's a new state, so they don't know who the utility company is. A lot of sanitation, you know, garbage collection is private. So when I moved to the town, for example, this was 20 years ago. The guy comes up to me one day and says, Mr. Beinhacker, we can't pick up your garbage anymore. I said, well, why? Well, because you haven't paid the bill. I'm like, a bill? And when I grew up, it was through the town.
Yeah.
And it was in my father's taxes. Like, I didn't know, no idea. So then I had to find out, you know, what the companies were and all this kind of stuff. So I would think it would be a big surf. Well, obviously, these other guys thought it was a good idea because several months ago they did it.
Yeah. Maybe I'm giving people ideas here also in the market. Okay. So in Belgium, somebody started it now, but I don't know whether they're probably still beatable if anybody wants it. Probably not.
I mean, it's just a question of getting the utility companies on board to receive the data, and you got to have partnerships.
You can make it easier than that.
You can still automate it outside.
Fill out people's forms first, and then send it to them, and then if the companies want to move, expose some API at some point, that's great. But in the meantime, you can do it another way, compile some PDFs, whatever. You always need to find the easiest solution first if you want to implement it.
Right, without saying, we need 50 partners to launch this thing when you can do it yourself, right?
Yeah. Also, there's a lot of money when people move involved. Like, people make an enormous amount of costs. So if you're in the middle of that, it's super interesting.
Right. There's a lot of opportunity, right? Like you said, get them a moving company, get them a gardener, get whatever they need, right?
Furniture, put some pans,
Yeah, good point.
Anything.
Right.
Anyway, I was quite relieved when he shut my idea down.
Okay.
Because I was at first learning. It was maybe a good idea, or he didn't think so.
Before its time, maybe?
But I thought about the idea because I hated moving administration, and I figured if I'm going to lead this company, all I'm going to be doing is moving administration. Maybe it's not for me.
For everyone else.
You
would have been doing what you hated for other people.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. So I was kind of relieved, and then I found something else.
So you had to find something else, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So what did you find?
I started a platform for doctors to stay on top of the latest research, something totally different.
Okay.
It was much more in what I knew. And it was really interesting. So imagine doctors, they need to stay on top of research, but they're not researchers.
Right.
And they're not awfully specific either on what they need to stay updated. So they can't just get a research journal and subscribe to that because they'll miss everything else and their interests might be wider and in another way also more specific than that specific research journal offers.
Okay. Are these specialists like spine surgeons and cardiologists, things like that, or are
those,
they general practitioners?
Those definitely, but general practitioners as well. Everybody sort of needs to stay on top of things.
Right.
So what I envisioned was think about it sort of like a feed reader that would pick up the research from all kinds of different places, made sure that you could follow specific topics.
Right.
But also it would then say, okay, this one seems like an interesting article for you to read based on. And
like more relevant to based on your profile or something like that.
Yeah, but also like we see that the author has a certain rank. Uh-huh. And, you know, you can calculate this kind of stuff. Google also tried at some point to make an author ranking. And at some point, they maybe still have the back end. But
based on data.
Based on data.
Analytics. Right. Okay.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
What was my question? So it was like an aggregator. It would aggregate information, but it would make it more relevant to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I started that. I got out of the Founder Institute, graduated. What I didn't think through so well was the business model. And that's where it ended up failing because I didn't really find it. And also, I was looking for a co-founder. I didn't have one, someone who would actually build it. And it was very hard to convince people to work with me on it because, well, if they're like, okay, I have a job. If you want me to work on this, how are we going to make money?
And right.
At some point I started coding myself and that was already a mistake. I should have stopped before that.
Not your thing.
Because it was not my thing. I'm not the right guy to start coding the thing, right. But anyway, I did it. At some point I gave up. And then I started working on another stupid idea.
Yeah, but you're learning and growing. And I mean, you get more experience, I think, from failure and frustration and you know, being shot down than if it goes well. Because if
I learned a lot from there also.
Yeah.
Actually, just to complete, I went part-time at the consultancy where I was working to do all this. So okay. I started working 3/5. So I had 2 working days and 2 weekend days in the week to work on my startup ideas and evenings, obviously.
Right.
I was in a quite hard working mode at that point. So I wouldn't shy away from working all the time.
Right.
And that extra space made that I could explore other stuff. So even though my first idea for which I actually established the company, everything failed, I could move on and try other things. And my idea that I had after that was that with the World Cup in Brazil, a lot of people were going to plan their trips there.
Right.
And my wife is Brazilian, so I go there often and we have a lot of insight into all the stuff you can do in Brazil and stuff. So I made a website like, if you plan your trip to Brazil, these are the games. You could do this kind of tours. You can then visit that and that. This is where you book flights, you know. And
so it was like a travel guide for the games.
Yeah. And I got affiliate revenue from linking you to specific flights providers and all that.
You got paid if they used their services.
Yeah. So if people click through to them, I would get a good chunk of flight tickets. which is, you can earn quite some money. The issue with this was that I was building a business on something that was going to be the past very soon.
Right. Because the airlines aren't paying you anymore because people just go directly now. Right.
Yeah. No. The issue was that so the World Cup, it's a very interesting site going up towards the World Cup, but then afterwards the World Cup is over, right? So
right. So then it's a short-lived thing. Then you got to do it for the next event.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
Right.
What I did learn a lot was I worked a lot with WordPress, with SEO, and how I had to optimize that.
Right.
Which is stuff I use today, so it's
right.
all not.
No,
lost.
WordPress is still the platform of choice, right? For
Our blog is still on WordPress. I don't know whether that's another story whether we will continue that and stuff. But at least the SEO learnings were invaluable.
Yeah, an area that everyone talks about. I'm still learning about. I work with my people here. It's a constantly moving thing. SEO, it's crazy.
True.
You know, today you're relevant. Tomorrow you're not even on page one. It's nuts. Yeah. It's crazy.
I did
a search once for business. I had a conflict, so I needed another lawyer to work on a matter with me. So I represent my client. The other person needed a lawyer. So I searched business attorneys near me. I was just curious because I know people. Not only did I not show up on the first page, but there were attorneys there that I know they don't even do business law. That were showing up. It was just so annoying. So we're redoing all that type of stuff.
At this, for attorneys and all, I think it's a huge opportunity because for us, it's difficult.
Yeah.
But we're doing it. I mean, we rank on stuff. But for lawyers, the amount of lawyers actually ranking is very, very low. Dentists, by the way, the same. I looked for my dentist online. I chose my dentist because it was the only one on which I could find a consistently good reviews, and I found her on Yelp.
I think it's the same way. My dentist, he's very, you know, he has automatic text messaging and reminds you of the appointment and everything. But I have no idea. I don't think you could go and I don't know if you can go. I don't think you can even book anything online on his website.
He should though. That's also a thing. Yeah,
it's not hard.
But already finding the right dentist is well.
We have these things in the United States called 1-800-DENTIST, and you could call anywhere in the United States, wherever you are. Let's say you move to Iowa, and you're from New Jersey, you don't know anybody. You go on 1-800-DENTIST, and they'll find you all the local.
No, sure, but how do you know whether it's a good dentist?
You don't.
Yeah.
It's a
because dentists, it's very, at least here, it's very sensitive. Either the dentist is really, really expensive and has this expensive site and everything. And
right.
But then you don't even know whether the expensive service is going to get you good service. The dentist I go now is a lady. She's very pragmatic and down to earth. She doesn't charge a whole lot. I like her and I'm very happy I found her through a few reviews, but it was super hard.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Anyway,
think about that.
So
we're getting,
I had the website for the World Cup.
Right.
That very quickly wasn't going anywhere either. I was making some money, but I mean,
right. Long term, it wasn't really viable, right?
No.
Right.
Then there was a startup weekend, and it was around health tech, and it was the first one. And I thought that was interesting because that was my area, right?
Right.
So I went to that weekend.
You said health tech? It was health technology?
Yeah. It was called a health startup weekend. And I went there. At the event, you team up in different teams to work on specific things. And our team ended up winning the weekend.
Oh, okay.
And it was the first event, and they got a lot of partners also. And there was some government involvement and all that. And very quickly, they invited us then as the winning team to come pitch for a certain accelerator. And We could get 50K there and guidance
for
and all
startup
that.
Startup money, right?
Yeah, and I made a file. I was the head of marketing of our so-called startup team.
Right.
And I made a file and a presentation and sent it all, and we got accepted to come pitch. We pitched. I did a part of the pitch. The CEO did a part of the pitch. We very quickly got the message that we were accepted.
Okay.
And then, it started becoming a funny situation. So imagine you're at a startup, you get a bunch of guys that have never met each other.
Oh, so you didn't even know your team. They just put it together there.
Yeah. We just said, oh, I want to work on this. And these other people also want to work on that and then get together. Yeah.
You don't even know these people.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you get to know them there.
Could be murderers from previous life. You don't have no idea. Okay.
It's true.
What was the concept that you came up with that you won the weekend with?
We didn't come up with it. It was a problem set forward and we worked it out.
Ah,
right?
Okay.
And the issue was that a lot of people have pacemakers and defibrillators and all that in their bodies. These things need follow-up.
Right.
And they send out a lot of signals. Like with diagnostics and stuff, to specific portals, but every single manufacturer has a different portal and sends out different emails and all those kind of things. And then these nurses, it's a huge pain for them to follow up all their patients because
it's all different.
The portal right. And getting the information from people.
If I have a pacemaker from this company and you have a pacemaker from the other company, they got to go both places. There's no aggregation of the data.
Yeah, and they don't know like in which patient is something going wrong. So we built this kind of thing that would scrape the emails and the portals and visualize it all in one dashboard.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got money for that. And then at that point, it's like, oh, okay, this is getting serious then.
Right, it was supposed to be like a learning weekend. Now you're in business with these people.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody had their jobs and all. I was part time, so I could do some stuff. But
yeah,
everything was going really slow, and yeah, I was sort of it wasn't going anywhere for a while. And at that point, my current co-founder, who
of SalesFlare,
of SalesFlare, who I met. In the Founder Institute, when I was working on that online,
was he on your team or no?
No. I met him at the Founder Institute when I was working on
the Founder Institute, right? Where the guy told you your idea sucked.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. He was there. Yeah.
Okay.
He was working on another startup. He was thinking about something where developers could easily drop their data and something, and then immediately access it through an API. A much more technical thing.
Right.
But we were in the same group in the Founder Institute. You're in little groups and you help each other. And we used to help each other a lot until he dropped out because he was totally overworked. He was like working on four things at the same time. And one of these things was his company where he was making business intelligence software. Uh-huh. And he calls me regarding that. I think somewhere in September, October 2013. And he says, we're going to Vegas to a conference in November. It's this big IBM conference. We have a booth there. We're going to sell our software. We have some guys, they're all business intelligence software guys, but we also like to have someone else as like a sales guy extra. Would you like to join? And he was going to pay everything and we were going to go there. All I had to do was take a few days off, have some fun in Vegas and sell.
Okay. And what did the software do at that point?
The software, it was from a company, it was called Explore Plus. It would complement IBM software called Cognos.
Okay.
And what it would do was different things. So we had three products. One of them was making sure that you could report on the metadata of the reports, which is lots of interesting use cases. Okay. And I won't go into that. Okay. Another one was making sure there was a connection between these reports and SharePoint, a lot of people wanted to publish these on SharePoint, and this automated that.
Right.
And then the third product was more of a database product on all this to manage that and keep it going fast. All common issues that people had. So at the conference, I would basically stand in the hallway, say, do you use Cognos? And if they would say yes, I would be like, oh, you know, do you have this issue and that issue? Well, we have products for that. And then they were like, oh, that's interesting. And then they would ask something technical. And then I would say, oh, I cannot answer that, but the guys over here, they know
bring them
all
over
about
to the
it.
Booth. Right.
And then
that was your job to field people out and bring them to the booth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I did the whole conference. So the guys were busy having all the chats and I was just getting people to the booth. That's a thing I learned in the other job. I did some conferences as well. And I learned that if you're at a conference, having this simple anchor, like, are you this or do you
right.
use that?
Well, because you could easily identify the people you were looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't know what the software was. Why do you need to waste your time talking to them?
Yeah. Yeah. If you can single them out like that,
right.
and also they say yes, you get them, you quickly do an explanation. Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Right.
It's way better than standing at a conference, being behind a booth and just watching the people come by.
Right.
You know,
giving them a card. You have a fishbowl and you give away an iPhone.
Yeah,
or something.
And then throw some pens in front of you
right.
and you're like, do you want a pen?
Yeah. I know. I've done all those too for different companies.
Yeah.
So, but this was probably recently, right? Because you said about 7-8 years ago you were with the founders thing, and then 4 years you're with
was November 2013.
Okay. Oh well, that's still 7 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. It was, yeah, indeed.
And you obviously stayed with him because he's your founder with Salesflare. So
yeah,
what happened that company? Yeah.
Yeah, we started selling well there at the conference, and we were very exciting. Lots of leads, lots of potential. They had sold already to some major companies in Belgium.
Okay.
And outside Belgium also over the internets. But we had so many more leads there. So we're very excited, and I decided then at some point, like, I had all these different things going and I was like, okay, what am I going to scrap? And the
different
site
ideas you mean
like,
you were working on?
No, I had the site, for instance, and I said,
okay,
the site that's going nowhere, stop.
Okay.
Let it run. The health startup thing that we started, I got the 50K. I was like, I don't see it going anywhere. Scrap. That was maybe a slight mistake because by now they've raised probably 10 million or so.
Oops.
But yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah, well, I mean, healthcare
okay.
technology is very big. Fintech, healthcare tech, it's big. Yeah.
Yeah. Overfunded also.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's, you know.
And then I said, okay, I'm gonna work on that. It seems really interesting. So we started working together. I started taking care of marketing and sales. And it was during that time that we sort of got the idea for Salesflare. The other co-founder, on that company sort of started like losing his interest a bit. And especially his wife was like, okay, at some point you need to stop this because it's not going anywhere.
Right.
When we were like following up all these leads that we got at the conference, we noticed that we just couldn't organize ourselves properly. It was very hard. I knew all about Salesforce. We had been using that a lot in the job I had previously.
Right.
And I knew that was definitely not something in which you would organize yourself for sales. It's really great for the company. It's a great, let's say, for reporting and building all kinds of administrative workflows but it's not something that you, as a salesperson, it helps you sell.
Right.
I saw actually that in most cases, people start filling out the absolute necessary things like their opportunities and what they're worth. So to give management an idea of what's in the pipeline, and then maybe add the companies required to add these opportunities, and then put some contacts on a newsletter. But definitely not like, did you have a call with them? What were the notes? When to follow up? None of that for us appeared in the CRM.
No, in Salesforce?
That in Salesforce, yeah.
That doesn't do all that stuff?
It does all these things, but it's built in such a way that it just, you don't want to do it. It's not super easy. It's a lot of work. It's a bit slow. And it's not organized in such a way that it makes it easier. Plus, it's just, I'm going to go a bit forward. So we tried Zoho as well. That's what the guys were using at Expo Plus.
Right.
Same issue. It's just Salesforce, but then cheaper. Made in India, so they can make it all cheaper.
Right.
We tried other stuff. But none of that like worked for us. And what we noticed was that it wasn't because it was necessarily really bad software or something, but it was more the expectations that the software was putting on us. And the expectation was that we were going to be these great people at filling it out. Every time something would happen, we would say CRM and put it in there.
Right, right.
Every time we met someone, we would put it in there.
Right. You know? But that's a lot of work. Not everybody does that.
Yeah, it's not only a lot of work. You need to have this amazing amount of discipline and habits and to make that happen. And
right.
Even if people maybe have it at some point it also starts slacking. Like you often see in salespeople who aren't selling much yet, they're very good at filling out the CRM.
Right, because they don't have any data. Right.
Yeah, and they can show that they've been doing something, right? But then at some point, these people start selling well, and then they're like, forget about the CRM. I'll just focus on selling. And then the sales manager says, what about the CRM? It's like, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to fill out the CRM, or do you want me to sell and make sales?
But they need the data to analyze what's going on with your sales efforts, right?
Yeah, they need some data for the sales efforts. There's obviously issues on many more levels if you don't start doing it, which the main issue we had and the main issue for which our customers, for instance, get a CRM, is the follow-up of leads, being able to organize yourself properly. Because if you have 5 leads or so, you can do it in your brains.
Right.
But as soon as you have 50, more than 10,
right.
more than 20,
yeah.
It starts becoming difficult to organize.
You got notes all over the place and you're trying to keep track of things. You got reminders on your calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all over the place.
Yeah. If you then start forgetting to follow up people or forget that you discussed something in the previous call already, then you start disappointing people, deals start slipping, and you lose out on a lot of opportunities. Plus, you're just making people unhappy and
so it's a snowball effect. And then one person who's interested runs into you, and you go, "Well, I was dealing with your own organization, but they didn't really follow up with me." And then,
especially in nowadays and the sort of setting we are in, where everything is reviewed and stuff, it's only worse,
right?
Because people will read about how bad you treat your customers, and
right, it's all out there.
Yeah.
Right. And you know what it is. If you're happy, you tell like 5 people. If you're upset, you tell like 100.
Yeah.
You know? So how does Salesflare, I don't mean to jump ahead of you, but how does Salesflare address those things that these other CRMs didn't? Because I know.
Yeah. So we figured that a lot of the data inputs that we were doing was actually just duplicating information, thinking about it technically. Like we're also we would live in 2 worlds. So we would live in our mailbox, for instance.
Right.
Doing lots of emails, new people would be copied in, there would be email signatures, and then we would start putting this information into another system, into the CRM manually. So it's like you send an email in one place and then go in the other place and you say, okay, I'm going to add a contact. And I'm like looking at their email signature. And I was like, oh, that's their phone number. But the phone number.
No, you want the email to be able to jump right into the pipeline, right? And just connect.
Yeah, not just the email. Also the name of the person, the email address, their phone number, their address,
info.
Their social profiles, their, everything. It's not just emails. It's the calendar meetings. It's the phone calls.
Right.
It's email open and click tracking, web tracking, information about the companies, information about people. Like I said, the email signatures, an enormous amount of information is available already and is digital. It's accessible.
Right.
And it's just a matter then for a CRM to actually access all these things, see right. how it needs to be combined, organize it for the salesperson in a way that the salesperson just says, okay, this is company I'm selling to. And then it says, oh, it seems like, you know, this and that guy. And we added all the information it, right? for you. Okay, I want to add that guy. That one doesn't belong there.
So what it integrates, well, obviously a lot of them do this, but so it integrates with like Google and out and Microsoft, right? Plus it also pulls data from other places.
Yeah. So actually at the moment that we started Salesforce, these integrations weren't common at all.
Right.
So we were like light years ahead. It's like people would tell us like, oh, you're going to integrate with emails. We just want to have the important emails in our CRM. We just want to copy it there. But this whole timeline thing in the CRM seems like a bit too much.
Right.
That's what people would tell us back then. Nowadays, it's the norm. But especially what we do still do very differently is the way the data is built up. We consider automated data input as how things should be, and then allow manual data input if necessary.
Right. Well, makes
while
sense.
Other CRMs come from a manual thing and then said, okay, we can synchronize in some data.
Right.
But we built it all in such a way that if you use our software, it's really like stuff is there. You just click some stuff and then it completes. It's a bit difficult to explain in marketing, and we try.
Right.
But it's most apparent if you use us next to a competitor, you can immediately see the differences in how things work.
Right. But you're basically pulling the data in and then saying, hey, you choose the data, don't input it. The other one, you have to start a file, open it up, and then click and connect everything. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
More manual.
Yeah, it's hard to explain without showing. But basically, if you're in our system, you start typing the name of a company. We already know the companies you're probably thinking about. You click. It says, okay, that's logo, name, website. You click again. It pulls in extra information about that company that we immediately provide to you. It says, okay, it seems like, you know, that person and that person and that person at the company. We fill that information based on their publicly available social profiles and email signatures. You say, okay, right. correct. I don't want to add that guy. Then it says, it seems like your colleagues know these guys, because we know that based on their email inboxes and calendars. And it says, it seems like this colleague has a really great connection with this person. It says this kind of Wi-Fi signal thing that says a great connection. And you can see that another colleague also knows that person, but not so well. So right. you could always use that person. As
so it's pulling data from like LinkedIn and Facebook and all kinds of places.
Yeah. Someday it doesn't like directly integrate with LinkedIn, because LinkedIn doesn't allow this kind of stuff,
yeah,
but it pulls some information from the, yeah. And then as you add people, it also fills in the timeline, because there's access to the mailbox and the calendar and the phone, and then automatically compiles that timeline, and then you can share it with your colleagues. And actually from your separate mailboxes and calendar and stuff, it all centralizes everything in one place. It also keeps track of which attachments you've been exchanging. So it's all the attachments, all the files are listed up for you. It shows some social updates. It auto creates tasks. So it says, like, it seems like you haven't heard this customer in 7 days. You want to follow up. It says, it seems like you didn't add notes to this meeting. You want to add notes.
So some little artificial intelligence.
It seems like you didn't answer this email. Do you want to answer the email? And if you do, then it auto completes all these things also automatically.
So is it better for some industries versus others?
Yeah. We only build it for B2B.
Okay.
B2B sales. It's only for small and medium-sized businesses at this point. Enterprises, they want the kind of customizability that Salesforce offers. We don't.
Right.
I mean, you can customize stuff, but not to a level where you create custom objects and all these kind of things. And it's mainly used by agencies, which includes marketing agencies, software development agencies, consultancies, PR agencies, all these kind of things, events agencies, and a lot of tech companies as well. A lot of fast-growing companies, including SaaS companies like ourselves.
Sure.
But in general, a bit of everything. Also telcos. okay. Telecom companies.
So can we, is there a demo? We could put a link in the show notes for if people
You can, if you go to salesflare.com, you can read about the software, you can watch a video, you can see the software, you can try it for anywhere between 7 and 30 days. We give you extra days on the trial as you set it up. We've seen that people who set it up further in their trial are more successful in the long run with the software, like selling more and all that, but also staying longer with us. So we incentivize that.
And it's all web-based, right? So you don't have, it's accessible from wherever you are. You log in and it's all there.
It's all web-based. Fee. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Maybe if you're behind the Chinese firewall, I didn't try, you can't access, but otherwise it's a, yeah.
Right. All right. Well, Yaron, I appreciate it. Let's put in the show notes that, you know, how people can learn about SalesFlare and hear your story. And I want to learn more about it myself because I've been looking at some different CRMs for my law practice, and I've been kind of circling the wagons on that issue. So it's good timely.
I think we have a few lawyers, but the lawyers in general don't think about sales yet in the way they should. I personally, that's my belief.
I agree.
I mean, it's very important to their business and they should definitely systematize more than they do.
Yeah, I have a few friends that use some CRMs, but very few lawyers do. Yeah, they don't even know what CRM means. Yeah, let alone, you know, they're not really business people. So
it's like they don't care about selling. I don't know. Yeah.
I just think they don't know what to do. That's the problem. They know they have to sell. Yeah. They know they have to create business, but they're just kind of making it up as they go. Like you said, they got notes. They follow up with their clients. And we don't have 100 cases going on at one time. Very few of us do. So you can keep track of it kind of. I hate to use the word, but half-assed.
Well, if you don't do, then you stay with a small practice, of course.
Right,
if you want to really grow it, right. There's like the big successful ones. I think those are the ones that are cracked how sales works.
But, yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. But I appreciate you spending time with me on the microphone. And I look forward to learning more about it. Let's definitely stay in touch.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Thanks, Arun.
It's fun.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.